A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee, Everything School HQ over there in Coryton. The Night Owl himself, ready to make his Florida Tennessee pick. Noted. Early Florida Tennessee picker himself.
No.
Brent Hubbs of BallQuest.com. Brent, how are you?
I'm good, man. What is it? You got to see it to believe it. It's hard not to see it based on what we saw out of that Florida team tonight against Utah. Just a lot of, a lot of self-inflicted wounds and a lot of errors. And it's interesting that, you know, there's times where Florida found rhythm and looked like, hey, they found something. And then there was just a colossal, you know, kind of meltdown. They couldn't protect up front. I didn't think Utah managed the game particularly well. A couple of strange things. Take the timeout at the end of the first half. Force Florida to punt with 40 more seconds on the clock. You might get a field goal. Get in the field goal range there. And then the decision to kick the field goal after your punter had pinned him inside the five, back-to-back punts. Like, Why are you trying a 56-yard field goal at that point? Don't give Florida any kind of life. Just put that game away. So a little suspect on some game one management. A lot of coaches watching that one tonight probably added a few things to their checklist, like make sure there's no double numbers on a punt return. That's probably at the top of everybody's list when they do their Friday walkthrough checklist. Let's make sure we've got all this right. And again, that's why double numbers are pointless. I know it's a recruiting thing, but you should get out of the world of double numbers because it just doesn't – there's no point in putting yourself in that situation. I mean, look what it cost you. It cost you seven points.
Huge. Is there a Tennessee player right now? Is there a Tennessee number that we would be in jeopardy of going down that rabbit hole?
Well, you got Danico Slaughter at zero, and you got Jalen Wright at zero right now.
Yeah.
So both of them can't play on special teams. So there's a couple here and there. I don't see the override. I mean, again, I know it's recruiting and every kid wants a single digit, and in the world of the transfer portal and the one-time transfer, if I don't get my single digit, I'm going to take the ball and go home. So I get some of that stuff, but you just can't allow that. That just can't happen.
Yeah,
I don't care if it's game one. I don't care if it's game 13. You just can't have that mistake. You got too many people in coaching pullovers standing on the sideline over there to allow that to happen. Somebody's got to be mindful of that. It's just it's just a no-no. You can't allow that to happen, in my opinion.
Did you see that Bud Elliott tweet about it?
No, I didn't see what he said.
It's so great. And the Florida State fans and my cousin who went to Florida State, they're all having a really good night. They're really enjoying what we're seeing from Florida out of the gate here, Brent. But he said over the summer, he said, quote, "There's a difference in knowing the Saban plan involving hiring 200 polos and knowing how to manage them."
Yeah, there's probably some truth to that. You know, I mean, know your role, know what you're supposed to. I mean, somebody has to be in charge of that deal. And again, that'll be brought up on the flight home and that'll be in the meeting, but it cost you 7 points. It was a huge turning point in the ball game right there. Cause you had to stop, you know, and then all of a sudden you give them life and it turns a 7-3 game into what, 14-3. And at that point at the half, 14-3 felt like it were at that point, 14-3 felt like it was 28-3. I mean, that's what Chris Fowler and Kurt Herbstreit basically said to open the second half. I mean, they were writing the Florida obituary in the first possession of the third quarter about, well, no moral victories, but you got to learn about yourself here in the second half and get back on the plane and head to the house. So
that offensive line looks rough. That was my biggest takeaway, is that offensive line is not good. And if that offensive line's not good, if you're Tim Banks, and this is something you and the VolQuest guys have talked about all summer, is like, is Tennessee going to be able to get pressure only sending four? Because that will be a big, big help for the secondary in this group. It seems like against Florida, they might be able to get home with four with some of these guys.
Yeah, you know, Florida was out without a center, without their starting center. You know, so we'll see where that goes. But they didn't play very well off the edge with the tackles.
Yeah.
You know, people have to get home. The one thing they and I think you'll see more of this is that quick passing game. Get it out of Mertz's hands as quick as you can. The quick outs to the tight end, a lot of tunnel screens, underneath stuff. I think you're going to see a good bit more of that stuff from Florida probably moving forward if they don't feel like they can protect. And so we'll see. You know, Graham's a guy that at times looks like he can play and looks like he's got a rhythm and it's all going well. And then one bad thing seems to lead to kind of multiple bad things or gets him out of rhythm. You know,
they didn't complete a third down conversion tonight.
Well, they were in third and long all night, you know. So, I mean, you know, they were – because, I mean, think of what they had third and one twice and false starting, turned it into third and six. And they just – a lot of self-inflicted wounds. And, again, I didn't think Utah was overly aggressive. I thought they played a little bit passive in the third quarter, just trying to get home a little bit, similar to what Tennessee did in the fourth quarter last year against Florida.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think Utah's a world beater. Florida's obviously got plenty of things to work on. That's a tough trip. I mean, that's a hard place to go. That's not a game you want to schedule. There's no way Billy Napier had any desire to go out there and play that game. Now you get back home and see what you can figure out in 2 weeks before Tennessee comes to town.
Is this like, I want Danny White to log on Twitter.com again tonight and be like, see, you wanted us in Utah to open the year. You wanted to make that trip to Provo. You wanted to just go out and see it. This is what can happen. We're going to stay in the friendly confines of Nashville, Tennessee, actually. We're gonna basically play a home game. Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, and they'll actually end up making more money by playing in Nashville, even though they bought to get out of the game from BYU. I mean, when you read the contract, it's a pretty good financial deal. I still have no idea why Virginia wanted to play this game. I mean, I'm not saying schedule Richmond or Liberty because it's probably not going to go very well for you where you're at right now. But, I mean, bring Eastern Kentucky over. Bring, you know what I'm saying? You're not making enough money to go play this game. Tony Elliott's in his second year. He needs wins.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, how much better would it be for Billy Napier if he had played, Florida Atlantic tonight and won that game and be 2-0 when Tennessee comes to town, instead of losing to another ranked opponent to kick off year two for him? So I don't think that the Virginia administration did Tony Elliott any favors by scheduling this game with Tennessee, you know, kind of on short notice. Obviously it's a great win, you know, great win for Tennessee to not go to Provo and not have to deal with that trip and make more money in Nashville, get in front of your home fans in the mid-state, and then play an opponent that's a Power Five opponent, but you're a 4-touchdown favorite over them.
Last thing on Tennessee, Florida here, Brent, when you look at this matchup now, based on what we've seen from Florida, one of the things that stood out to me is they kind of remind me of Kentucky last year, where Will Levis kind of in the pocket, bad offensive line. They struggled running the football. You thought they would be better running the football. Johnson and Etienne did nothing tonight. And that was probably one of the biggest surprises to me, was they just could not run on Utah, who was out their starting linebacker, out defensive linemen. Like, they were missing a lot of bodies too. And Florida just could not run the football at all. I just look at it where I'm like, I think this reminds me a lot of what we saw from Kentucky, where I just think they're going to be okay most weeks defensively. I think they'll get better as the season goes along. But offensively, I think it's just going to be stuck in neutral. And it's just going to be very frustrating. Where you're going to be, they're going to be able to drag some teams to the pit where they did to Georgia. I don't know if you remember that, where it was cold and it was like 17-10 and they weren't going to win the game, but they just brought you down to the darkness. They were the bane of the SEC. They were born in the darkness. And that was just kind of what they were all year. That's my gut on Florida, Tennessee right now.
Well, I mean, that's, again, the biggest surprise. If you're a Florida fan, the biggest surprise tonight is that you couldn't run the football. You're not better running the football. You didn't have a very good run game last year outside of Anthony Richardson. So I think that is a huge concern if you're a Florida fan leaving this game tonight, is that they struggled to run the football. I think, you know, if you're going to put it in Graham Mertz's hand, you know, 45 times, that's not a great combination. He needs a run game. He's more of a play action guy. I know they did some quick game stuff, which they'll have to do if that line doesn't improve. You know, so we'll see. I mean, I don't completely disagree with your analogy. They just, the fact that they couldn't run the football tonight is certainly a head scratcher for them moving forward, because they're going to struggle if they can't run the football. And how do you get back and find a run game? There's only so many jet sweeps you can run. You can't live off the jet sweep, you know, for your entire run game. And so we'll see kind of where they are, moving forward, if they can figure out and find a run game, because they didn't have a semblance of one. But they got to stay on schedule too. I mean, they've got to eliminate the self-inflicted wounds and the penalties and some of that crazy stuff they did. Here's the other thing too, and I wrote this in 10 things I think last week or the week before, and kind of my SEC roundup. I was reading up on Florida's new defensive coordinator and that Florida defense, and he talked about, you know, the challenges of playing safety in his system and how much he puts on his safeties, asks them to do a whole lot, which I think is a dangerous thing when you're talking about playing Tennessee's offense, because nobody attacks safeties in the country more than Josh Heupel does with the way you spread people out. So their safeties first play of the game obviously got confused, got lost. There were a couple other opportunities that Utah missed where the safeties were a bit out of position. So they have got to clean up that safety spot in the next 2 weeks before Tennessee comes to town. Or Tennessee, I think, has got a chance to have some guys running down the middle of the football field because of the pressure they put on the safeties.
Starting to feel like LSU from a season ago, Brent. Just let's move it to 11 a.m. kick and let's take over the swamp and make this.
If it were 11 a.m. or noon kick, that would be a great thing. But it's going to listen, Florida fans will be, I mean, Tennessee will have to, they'll have to be ready for a crowd. They'll have to settle in and we'll see how it goes. I mean, Florida will play much better in 2 weeks than they played tonight. They're not going to suddenly become the 72 Dolphins, I don't think, in 2 weeks, but they won't make the same mistakes, you know, to unforced errors. They won't make as many of those in 2 weeks as they made tonight, for sure.
Brent, you do this piece pretty often, especially when the season gets going here, and I always enjoy reading it, the things that you think you know. But I want to know, what does Brent not know about the 2023 Vols? What is your strongest take on, like, I don't know this, and you just won't know until the Virginia game gets going? What is the number one thing you don't know about this team?
I think it's the offensive line. And what is the offensive line going to be? I think they're going to be better than what Florida played, what Florida showed. And I think their tempo helps them. Mm. But, you know, we're sitting here talking about, you know, Virginia's playing four new starters on the offensive line. I think Florida started four new guys on the offensive line. Well, with Cooper Nays not going to play in this game against Virginia, Ollie Lane's at center for the first time ever.
Mm.
Okay, you're going to play Andre Keurig at left guard, first time ever. John Campbell at left tackle, first time ever, you know, right tackle. I mean, Jeremiah Crawford's played a little bit over there 2 years ago before they flipped him to left tackle. So he's got a few snaps there, and you've got Spriggins. So essentially, in a lot of ways, Tennessee's got four new starters on the offensive line. Now, more experience, but they're doing it. Some guys are doing it in a different system like John Campbell, and some guys are doing it in a different position like Ollie Lane. So I want to see how this group fares and how they play and settle in as an offensive line. Obviously, they're going to get Cooper Mays back at some point. We'll see when that is. But the offensive line question was never going to get answered in fall camp. So that's not a new question. It's a compounded question because of the Cooper Mays injury. But it was never going to get settled and say, okay, this is their line, or here's the final answer on the offensive line. So, I think that's the biggest unknown right now for me. There's other questions, but for me, that's probably the biggest that I wonder about going into this game.
I like it. Brent, which group cannot afford any other early injuries outside of the offensive line? Because that's the obvious one. But outside of the O-line, who do you look at this roster in the early depth chart that was released that makes you say, like, this is too thin? This, it could even be like just one particular free safety, strong safety. Who is it for you that just can't afford an injury, or it could really derail what Tennessee's going to try and do?
I think it's the tight end position. But because I think Ethan Davis is going to be a really good player. I'm not sure he's ready right now. McCollin Castles is not yet done it in this system. I think he's a talent. I think he's going to be a good player, and I think he's going to be fine. But he's not yet played a game in the field. And then, you got Jacob Warren. That's it. That's really it. And the tight end is such an integral part of what they do. Now, they're not going to have a tight end do what Princeton Fant did last year. They won't use a tight end that way. He's not going to line up in the eye. And they're not going to do some of the things they did with Fant. But they want to play with a tight end all the time. Everybody keeps talking about four wide, get Squirrel on the field with Dante and Brew and Ramel Keaton. And no, they don't want to do that because that negates the splits. You put four receivers, if you flank two to each side and you lighten the box, that negates some of your splits. You take that tight end and you can flex him out to make it four wide, or you can bring him in. You motion him in, it forces the defense to react, to do things differently. So if you keep him out wide and they split out wide, all of a sudden they're going to go with a light box. What are you going to see Tennessee do? They're going to run the football. That's why Tennessee run for over 2,000 yards the last 2 years, right? If you want to, you need to protect, or you're trying to get a better matchup out there, you motion that tight end, and all of a sudden the nickelback has to react and come in the box. Or you've got to bring the safeties down in, and all of a sudden you tighten up the box a little bit. Well, that gives you the opportunity to go over the top. Mm. It gives you a one-on-one matchup out there that you were looking for. So the tight end, and I know this is Josh Heupel's largely out of the Briles system offensively, but the root of the Briles system and the Heupel system has a lot of Mike Leach in it. And one of the things Mike Leach always played with was a tight end. He always wanted a tight end on the field because he could motion that tight end and manipulate the defense. So I think tight end is just a valuable position for this team. I don't know that you can do everything you want to do with Ethan Davis right now because he's a freshman and Castles is still learning. So I think that's the position that's really thin that would be of concern, offensively. On the defensive side of the ball, with Elijah Simmons out, I would say defensive tackle, with Terry gone and with Elijah Simmons out, you probably don't need another injury there. Now you can slide guys inside and survive. But I don't think you're going to be at your best if you have another, significant injury to the defensive tackle position. I think they got depth at linebacker. I think they got depth at corner. I think they have more depth at safety than you'll probably see them play, but we'll see where that's at. But I think they've got, if Wesley Walker's out and they're playing Andre Turrentine, I think they can be okay there. I don't think that's catastrophic.
Would you have said that in May?
No, yeah. Because I think Turrentine's had a good off season. I also would have said in May that I wasn't sure. I was surprised Kamal Haddon was still on the team.
Yeah.
And now he's a starter.
Is he going to be good to go on Saturday? Like, what is it? Is he going to start?
He's going to warm up. We'll see where he goes and goes from there. If it's not him, it's going to be Gabe Judy Lawley.
Okay.
If something were to happen to Jalen McCullough and they ended up playing Jordan Thomas, would there be some growing pains at safety? I'm sure there would be. But I think in pretty short order, you could get settled in back there. Those are kind of the positions of sort of where I would be like, okay, don't say quarterback, don't say offensive line. On the offense, I'm going to say tight end. On defense, I'm probably going to say an interior lineman.
It's probably not going to happen. The Vols are favored by 28 here on Saturday, Brent. But if this game came down to the wire and it got really crazy and it was somewhat similar to the Pitt game last year, what would your be like if you had to put on your clairvoyant hat here, Brent? Why do you think this game ended up that way? If that's and if that is what happens, if it's 31-34 late, why did it go down that road, do you think?
Well, if that's the score you're talking about, then it's all on the defense. If it's 13-10, then why you're there is because your offensive line didn't play well and the quarterback didn't play well. So if it's a close game, there's not one reason necessarily that you can pinpoint until you know what the score looks like. If Tennessee gives up 30 plus points in this game, then there's large red flags for this defense, you know, for the rest of the season, because that's going to be the shocker of all shockers. If Tennessee doesn't score 30 points in this game, there's going to be red flags among Tennessee fans that are going to be like, wait a minute, Joe Milton's not what everybody told me he was going to be this offseason and this, that, and the other. So, you know, we'll see. You know, I'm going to give you a preview of one of my 10 things for Friday. Fans need to remember this. It is a marathon, not a sprint. Okay. And what I mean by that is, I mean, obviously you got to go win the football game. Okay. If you don't win the football game, we're in a different conversation. But even regardless of what the score is, careful with your hot takes either way. Right. I mean, it's week one. I mean, think back to last year, week one, right? The defense did not get a sack.
Yeah.
1.5 tackles for loss. And everybody was like, what's the matter? Rodney Garner's group, they can't get anything done on defense. And holy smokes, you know, what is going on? Then the next week they go to Pitt, they get 4 sacks, 6 tackles, 6 or 7 tackles for loss. But then the offense doesn't get it going. What's going on with the offense? And then it just sort of settles in. And so what you got to remember is it's a long ways till the end of November. And there's a lot of growing to do. There's a lot of improvement to make. Guys are going to step up and come in out of the blue. I mean, it wasn't like Jalin Hyatt lit it up. I know he scored on the first possession last year, but it wasn't like he didn't have an Alabama type coming out party, you know, the first 2 weeks of the season. It was all about Cedric Tillman. So, I mean, teams evolve, and how this team evolves and improves the first month of the season will dictate a whole lot about what October is going to look like. And, you know, we'll see where this team goes from there. That's been the fun thing about these last 2 years is it's a team that has gotten better and evolved. Now, you could make an argument in year one. It took them a little too long to figure out to get Bayless Jones in the slot, you know, and it took them too long to force the ball to Cedric Tillman a bit and some of those things. That's fine. But they got better as the year went on, as they started kind of finding themselves and figuring out who they were. Last year, obviously, they figured it out much earlier and got it going after that overtime win at Pitt and really started settling in. And Hendon Hooker became Hendon Hooker, and Jalin Hyatt became, you know, a guy who's going to tear it. Looks like it's going to tear it up or certainly be a factor for the Giants week one. And away we go.
Scared that he put Odell's number on. It's a lot of hype now. I don't know if I would agree with that.
I mean, lay low, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
go out there and do your thing. Go back to the locker room. It's the New York media, brother. You ain't seen anything like it yet. So, yeah, I would not do anything to draw a whole lot more attention to myself than what's already been written about me. There's been way too much written about him to this point as well. And I think, you know, flipping it back to Tennessee, I think Joe's tried to do a good job of that, of just kind of reflecting, talking about his teammates, talking about just being ready to play, not getting too caught up in anything, because I mean, look, there's, you know, if Joe doesn't play well on Saturday, we all know what the reaction's going to be.
It's going to be measured, Brent. Yeah, like, I mean, it's going to be, there's not going to be one Vol call about Nico Iamaliava the following week. You're not going to have one message board on the generals' quarters.
Nobody's going to have a post about it, you know.
No.
And I think he's done, while everybody is also giving him the hype, right? I think he's going to do a good job of deflecting that off, making it about this team and kind of, you know, everything about what they do as a group instead of just about him, which I think is a smart leadership move on his part.
I just, for Joe, the thing I want to see is like, it's just funny when I like hop on shows talking about Tennessee and stuff, The thing that I find that's interesting is that a lot of people just assume that Tennessee fans are worried about the accuracy with Joe. And that's just not something I'm worried about. I think Joe's going to complete a high percentage of passes this year. He hasn't thrown a pick yet in Heupel's system. Heupel's quarterbacks don't throw picks. You just go through, whether it's Mizzou, UCF, Oklahoma, wherever. It's just not going to happen. It's a good bet that he's going to be fine there. Year three in the system. My thing is just the offensive line. Like, what happens if he takes the bad sacks that he took in the Clemson game in high pressure situations that are a little bit different? Like, what happens if the left side of the offensive line, his blind side's bad? And what happens? He's not as mobile as Hendon Hooker. He's not going to make that quick, just take off, save a down. That's just not in his DNA. I think at this point, you kind of are what you are. And I think expecting Joe to be that kind of quarterback, I think it's just not going to happen. So can you survive? Can he do enough to alleviate those issues if Tennessee's offensive line takes a step back and the blind side's not there? Is he able to read it and feel it and make sure that they're not in third and long because they had a bad sack on one of the first two plays of the possession? I think that's, for me, the biggest thing that I'm ready to see. And I hope we actually see it against Virginia. I hope they get home a couple times, and I want to see what Joe does in a crowded pocket.
Well, again, I'm gonna give away half of my 10 things I think, because
that was not the plan. Just to let you know,
but you and I are on the same page. I mean, one of my points that tomorrow in that story is, I think it's good that Tennessee's offensive line is going to get tested to a degree on Saturday. I'm with you 100%. It's not a good thing for them to be playing two very mediocre defenses that's not going to challenge them, you know, before they go to Florida. Now, Florida didn't look like the most dynamic pass rush team in their loss tonight, but you know, they're bigger, they physically look better than what they looked last year. But I think it's a good thing for this offensive line that they are getting a test, a better test in week one than you would be by just playing another payday game. To pad stats and give a little false sense of where you are.
I agree. Do you have a final score prediction? How do you think it ultimately goes? And then, do you have an MVP? Who do you think has the best day for Tennessee on Saturday?
Listen, man, I'm giving you half of the 10.
This is going up on Friday morning. Folks are going to read the column. How early is your column going up, Brent?
Predictions don't go up till lunchtime, man.
Okay, well, this will be up before lunchtime, so you can save that one.
I've got Tennessee winning. I think everybody's going to pick Tennessee winning and winning comfortably. I think that what gets lost a little bit in Virginia and obviously what they went through last year at the end of the year is just horrific, and it just a tragedy, of just a crazy, horrible tragedy. Before that happened, when you were talking just about the football team at Virginia, they had a lot of issues. And Tony Elliott was very, very critical of that Virginia team about their lack of buy-in, how they didn't buy in, they weren't committed to things, and all those, you know, to each other and all that kind of stuff, which I thought was really fascinating. And it's kind of been lost in the talk about Virginia. I still feel like Virginia's I don't think they're ready to take a giant leap from year one to year two. I don't think that they've got themselves identified and got their culture established and who they are and all those types of things. So I think because of that, I think if Tennessee gets out of the gates early in this game, I think it could get rough on Virginia pretty quick. You know, he's not young, but a new quarterback and a new system, going up a level. He wasn't dominant at the level he was at prior to in Musket. And I just think there's going to continue to be quite a few growing pains for Virginia, which is why I think this is a good opponent. Now, Virginia's defensive front, solid, you know, even though that Chico Bennett's not going to play their best pass rushers. But again, it'll give Tennessee's offensive front a good test. But I think overall Virginia is still a ways away, which is why I'm surprised they're playing this game, because I don't think this game helps Tony Bennett.
It's an interesting staff, too. It's a lot of Air Force guys. And I've forgotten that he has a lot of Air Force ties. And I got the Air Force helmet over here. Troy Calhoun, friend of the program. And it's kind of interesting. The Clemson guy has a lot of Air Force guys on his staff.
Yeah, he does. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, when you put your first staff together, a lot of times you kind of go where you're most comfortable. And I think that's, you know, one of the questions that people had when they were talking about, you know, him for the job, for a job. Is he the right answer? Is he the right fit? And that type of thing. And I think I called him Tony Bennett, by the way, instead of Tony.
Well, there is a Tony Elliott and a Tony Bennett. You did that. And I mean, they, it's not fair when we are.
You know the coach's name, right? It is late at night.
Well, hold on. Last night, my co-host Matt Green called. He was hyping up Penn State and called him James. He called him James something, but not James Franklin. And well, I forgot. I
mean, you got to be better. You got to be better than that. But no, I mean, I think sometimes you go in and hire the person you're most comfortable with, the people you're most comfortable with, and I think that can be a danger if you're not careful. And you know, your first staff, you can't hire all your buddies, even though, you know, you're looking for loyalty and that type of thing. Now, I think his defensive coordinator is good. I think they did a nice job last year and kind of getting going, and they exceeded everybody's expectations because they were so bad the year before. But, you know, I think sometimes when you're an assistant, you lean towards the people that you know. And sometimes that can get you in trouble. I think one of Butch Jones's issue was, you know, he probably brought too many people with him from Cincinnati, which probably didn't help him. He didn't have to bring enough real Power Five experience or any SEC experience with him. And I think when you look at what Josh Heupel did, he brought his offensive guys, which makes total sense. But you look at his defensive guys, they're from a lot of different places. And they have a lot of big conference experience when you look at it. I mean, Tim Banks has been in the Big Ten. Brian Jean-Marie has been a Big Ten guy. Willie Martinez has been in the SEC before he came. I mean, he was obviously here before. He was at Georgia for years. Rodney Garner, we know. So that was the side of the ball that had a lot of experience, which I think was a smart move.
Was that Heupel's idea?
I would imagine. You're the head coach. You're going to put your staff together. I don't think anybody's making you hire at that point. But I think it was a smart move by him to bring in some people to help navigate. Of course, he understood the SEC. He had been in this league as an assistant, and then had gone off to be a head coach. I think the challenge is when you leave a coordinator's position and you go be a first-time head coach, how much has your head coach you've been working for prepared you for the job? Now you look at that and you say, well, Kirby Smart's doing really well, right? But remember this about Kirby Smart: went back to his alma mater, knew a bunch of people, the media, you know, the media handlers down there were there when he was working there, so he had some familiarity with some things. Then you look at a guy like Jeremy Pruitt, clearly wasn't ready to be a head coach. How many other guys have come out of the Saban tree that weren't ready for a big time job, that jumped straight into a big time job because some group of donors said, hey, we need to go hire the, you know, a Saban assistant to get that deal in there. Now, Sam Pittman's done some nice things at Arkansas. So, I mean, sometimes you have some guys who have done it. But I think, you know, you have to have a guy who's got a pretty good grasp and a pretty good comfort level in who they are. And a pretty good understanding of what it takes to be a head coach. And I think in some of these places, you get a guy and he's just been in the back room breaking down film, right? And that's where you end up, that's where you land. And they get to this deal and they're like, wait a minute, I got to do all these other things. I need to be in the back getting a game plan together. Well, that's what your assistants have to do.
And I think that's what a lot of Tennessee fans are most afraid of with Heupel, right? When he came in, it was just, is it just going to be offense? Does he know he has to recruit? Does he know he has to do all this other stuff? You can't just be the offensive whiz.
But he had been a head coach at a program that had expectations for success. He wasn't just coming from, you know, being the offensive coordinator, putting up a lot of points in at an SEC school. He had head coaching experience. And I just think that that's – really, ultimately, what Tennessee needed was they needed somebody that had some legitimate head coaching experience. And Jeremy Pruitt did not have it. And look, we can joke about Butch Jones. It's not like Butch didn't do good things, right? Mm-hmm. He made some bad hires when it come time to you know, some changing on his staff took place. You know, Derek Dooley was a head coach at Louisiana Tech.
Yeah.
And there's growing pains there, right? And Billy Napier going through those growing pains at Florida right now, you know. And I don't think Billy Napier inherited a great situation. I don't think Dan Mullen gets enough criticism for what he left that place. There's no reason that place should be bad and should be downward in a downward trend the way that it is. You know, and then you look back. I mean, Lane Kiffin wasn't ready. I mean, look, great offensive mind, but when he was here first time, Lane Kiffin wasn't ready to be a head coach. He didn't get the magnitude of little things like the Vol walk. That seems pointless. What do we need to do a Vol walk for?
Wait, did he really not like the Vol walk?
He didn't grasp what it, I mean, this is, I mean, Lane Kiffin on his first game day, on game day, went running through campus, went for a morning run through campus, like through tailgaters and, hey, how y'all doing? And like, dude, like what are we doing here? You know, I mean, it was just it was different, you know? And I mean, look, I think he's handled himself. I think he says too much, you know, and has any, you know, of his own personal opinions probably out there too much, but he's clearly handled himself better in Oxford, Mississippi than he ever did at Tennessee, but he was young and immature. And so I think that's the hard part is finding who do you find that's ready for the job, that's really ready for a job. You know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. For Tennessee, they've had a hard time getting it to work. And in other places, at times it's work. I think it's harder now than it's ever been because as what the you know, he tweeted out, you got a lot of people to manage. It's not just 85 players. You got this big budget. You got, you know, 70 people working there wearing coaches' shirts. You know, you're a CEO in charge of roster management, staff management. The last thing you're doing is calling ball, you know? I mean, it's just kind of down the priority list as a head coach. It's different than it was 15 years ago, 10 years ago, given the state of college football and the direction everything's going right now.
I love it. Brent, what can the good folks check out from you and the team over at VolQuest.com this week?
Well, we've just posted the war room on the general's quarters as we multitasked here. That was pretty.
I was going to say, when did you post the war room? I've been waiting. It was like 8 days, by the way. I don't want to get on you, Brent, but I was looking at the math here, and I'm looking at 825, and I was or 823 or something.
I don't know that I can count. I mean, nobody. I didn't take this job to be a counter. Okay.
Yeah.
It's the math is the reason I majored in communications at the University of Tennessee is. The first math class you were required to take was a class called Math 110 Algebraic Reasoning.
Okay.
Okay. I took it at Ayers Hall, second session summer school to get acclimated to college. Mm. I went in, I sat in the first day of class, and the first 2 days of class, we discussed in detail what a variable was.
Right.
You know, what does X mean in solving an equation? And I thought, man, this college thing's pretty good. I can handle this.
Mm-hmm.
Second math class was a stats class. That I limped through. It wasn't great, but I never saw pre-calculus. I never saw calculus. I never saw any of those other math things. So, and that's part of the reason why I went communications because I'd have never survived business as a math because of the math. I'd have never got thrown. I'd have never gotten through math.
No.
So there's a good chance I could have counted 7 days, 6 days, 8 days. You know.
I'm just over here waiting it. I'm just like, hey, I just need my fix, Brent. I'm just like over here. I'm like, I need, hey, where is the Chris Cole nugget? Like, where it's late on a Thursday. Where is it?
We just dropped it. We just
all right. Well, I'm recording a podcast with you. You're multitasking.
Listen, man, I like you, but my people are going to be mad if the war room's late. All right.
Look, I'm one of those people. I should have opened with, where's the war room, Brent? Why are you agreeing to pod appearances when the war room hasn't been posted yet?
Well, the pod was going to go at like 10:30, and then I get this, hey, man, let's just do it after the Florida game.
Hold on. You said 11. You said 11.
Well, 11 still gives me 30 minutes to get.
Yeah, hold on. It was only ended up being 12, and I was like, I don't want to jump in the middle. And you were nice. You were like, I'll come up late. But I also didn't feel bad about this because Brent Hubbs made the point where he's like, he's a night owl. He'll be up.
Oh, I'm just getting started. We can talk plenty because I got the war room posted now. I got to get to the front page, but I'm almost there with that. So we're in good shape. So whatever's on your mind today, we can talk about now.
Oh my goodness. Look at Brent Hubbs here. You're like lighting up. You're getting it's almost midnight when we're taping this, and you're jumping up. You're ready to go.
Oh, absolutely.
What are you watching after this, Brent? What are you getting into the rest of the night?
What will I do the rest of the night here? I've got to finish. I do have to finish a couple paragraphs and 10 things. I think I will get that done. I will triple check my spot boards for Saturday to make sure I haven't missed anything on those.
Mm.
And then I will finish with some reading of some notes and a little more deep dive into some, what my wife likes to call useless information. So I will dive into some useless information here before we shut her down and head to Nashville tomorrow and get ready for the Vols on Saturday morning.
What's your day going to be like on Saturday? Is it just like, or what time does it start? What time do you think it ends? Your day, like, how does it start and how long does it end? What's your Saturday looking like?
We go on the air with the pregame show at 10 Eastern time. So that's 9 Central. I stay on Eastern time. Okay. I never change my clock.
Okay.
I'm going to stay on Eastern just so I know where I'm supposed to be all the time. Again, math is not my friend. So we've got to stay as standard as we can stay in my
Brent,
world.
Brent, kickoff is 11 a.m. just want to let you know, it's 11, not 12 on Saturday.
It's a noon Eastern kick on Saturday.
Yes.
So it was, I will get there, I will be in the booth in Nissan Stadium by 8 a.m. Eastern. So that's 7 Central.
How many hours of sleep is Brent Hubbs going to be running on Saturday morning? I'm going to guess not a high amount.
I don't know. I mean, we'll get there about 8 and games at noon. New clock rules means the game will be 3 hours and 54 minutes instead of 3 hours and 59 minutes. So games could be over at 4. Press stuff's going to be done by 5. Going to write, knock out a few things there, get back in the car probably – between 7 and 8.
Okay. Stop. Are you driving back same night or no?
Yeah, we'll drive back same night. We'll stop in Carthage. I'll hit the Arby's in Carthage.
What's your Arby's order?
That varies. It could be a roast beef sandwich. It could be a chicken bacon Swiss.
Okay.
I'm disappointed there's no potato cakes. But then the caveat to that trip is you got to go over to the Love's gas station there at the big truck stop.
Yeah.
And the Dunkin' Donut in there is a self-serve kiosk Dunkin' Donut that I don't care if you go in at 2 in the afternoon, 2 in the morning, whenever you go in, they have the freshest donuts behind the glass that you'll ever find. So
you need to wonder, why is it so fresh at this Love's in middle of nowhere, Tennessee? Why is it so fresh all the time?
Because it's a truck stop. They're always busy. So they just cycle them through. So we'll roll out with probably 3 donuts. Mm. No cashiers needed there. Everything is a self-checkout. And we'll gas up, and then we'll head back to Knoxville, and then we'll get ready for TV on Sunday morning at 10 a.m. And then we've got YouTube show Sunday night. And then Sunday afternoon, I'll rewatch the game and I'll do 10 things I think I learned on Sunday afternoon.
Okay. So you're missing Gibbs on Friday. Were you there last week for the opening?
I was there last week for the opener. It was too many people for me. So I talked myself onto the sideline and stood in the end zone and watched the game there where it was not very crowded, but it was a great crowd. And obviously, didn't go Gibbs's way, but it did give him the gate for the year that they gave him enough of their budget money because there was a sled load of people there. I mean, it was packed. It was packed. And a cool deal for the new stadium that was finally done and up and running back to normal up there. So it was cool. It just didn't go the way that the home team wanted, but that's the way it goes sometimes. It's a little different when you don't have as big of a dog in the fight because I don't have anybody suited up, so I cheer them on, wish that they would win. And hope
you went to Gibbs too, right?
I did, and I hope that they win, and I wish them the absolute very best. I'm probably not as emotionally invested in it as I've been the last 4 years, though, so which is only normal. But I'm happy that the stadium's open. I'm happy for those kids and in the community, and they've got Carnes on Friday night. We might catch part of that on the live stream, see what's going on there. As because I don't think I'm gonna be hitting Second Avenue for a big party time since I've got to be in the box at 8 a.m. at the Central at that point in time. So I'll probably have a pretty early evening and shut her down pretty quick. So we'll probably watch a little high school football on our computer and call it a day.
There you go. A lot of good games tomorrow night. I'll be at Bearden on the sidelines. You might see me on that one. Bearden and I was at Bearden Alcoa where the lights went out on the field.
It was a crazy game. I mean, Bearden has had two gut wrenchers.
Yes.
I mean, they had the West game and then the turnaround, the Alcoa game. I mean, if they don't fumble it there, or
they fumbled on the one. Like they get in.
That was going to be a two possession lead.
Yes.
Probably
with 4 minutes to go. Yeah. And then Alcoa went 99 yards down the field. They have this Eli Owens who's gigantic. And just there are some guys where you just look at and you're like, I don't know why you don't just throw the ball to him over and over again. Yeah. He's just humongous. Like everything is three guys at once. And Bearden's strong, though. Their line is good. They have good tackles. Lee Smith's kid is the left tackle, and he's really good. They have two good backs. Now they're pretty talented. Like they should have won both of these games. Like the Bearden's a really, really good team. They're the ultimate. The record doesn't match how good they are. And they get Anderson County. They open the year with three straight defending state champions.
Yeah, and that's an 0-2 Anderson County team, desperate for a win at this point. Because, and that's, you know, that'll be a heck of a game. Bearden's got a really good defense. I don't know how much Anderson County is going to be able to score. That'll be the challenge in that one.
Great quarterback, Isaiah Hall. Transfer from Jefferson is under center for Anderson County. So I'm interested to see how that matchup.
I am too. He's obviously adjusting to a lot of new parts and new things there. So we'll see how that goes. They had a tough opening slate too. I mean, they opened a while and then they went to Science Hill and now Bearden. So for a state champ team, there was no cakewalk for them to get things started. And then, as you mentioned, Bearden, Josh Jones said, hey, we'll just play anybody that'll play us. And he found three that'll play them. They just happened to be state champions.
But hey, maybe it pays dividends later on because everybody makes the playoffs in the Tennessee high school ranks. Who cares? Everybody makes the playoffs.
It's like the NBA. It's like the NBA.
Yeah.
Everybody makes the playoffs, right?
I mean, that was the biggest thing for me coming from Georgia. And I see this like Oak Ridge 3-7 playoff team. I'm like, what? What do you mean playoffs? 3-7? What?
Yeah,
you make the playoffs.
I mean, there's a couple of four team. I think they've adjusted, but a couple of years ago there were a couple of four team regions.
Yeah,
I mean, the day they issue pads, you punch your playoffs. You could have gone over.
Yeah,
in the playoffs because there's only four teams in the region.
And you have this made up stuff with some of these small itty bitty schools who get to play their own private schools, and then they're still called state champions at the end of the year. And I'm like, I don't know if this qualifies. I don't know if this qualifies. I don't know what Webb's doing over there, but I don't think we can call those state champions. I don't know. I look at some of these slates where I'm like, I don't know. But then also, are you going to the? So you're not going to go because Austin Price is going to the Brentwood game, right? So you're not going to go to that one.
I don't know that I'm going to go. I'll go to that one. I've got a couple of TV things I've got to take care of. A couple of deals I got to do. I've got to handle.
Because Hypo's going to be there too, right?
I don't think he really cares whether I'm there. Although I did stand next to Butch Jones to watch in Memphis to watch. Who was the tackle? Who was the 5-star tackle? Transferred, ended up at USC, I think. What was that kid's name? Anyway. I'm old. It's late night and I'm old. But anyway, I did stand next to Butch Jones and watch him play.
There
he pushed over a bunch of kids that were like a foot and a half shorter than him. And it weighed about 150 pounds less than he did.
Not Butch Jones pushing down.
No. The tackle did. The tackle did.
Butch Jones at this high school game, just pushing kids away. Like, get out of my way. I'm here to watch a high school prospect.
There were kids lined up against this kid. Golly, I can't think of his name. And he just kind of pushed him over, and that was it. Like, he didn't really show any footwork or any skills. He just kind of shoved him down, and that was the end of it.
But when you watch these high school games, some of these guys, they don't really have to move. You just have to be in the way for a little bit.
Absolutely, and that was the case there for sure.
Just be in the way for a little bit. BallQuest.com. Go subscribe today if you are not already. Brent, always a blast talking balls and everything else. Enjoy the weekend. Safe travels, my friend, and we'll talk again soon.
Drew Richmond.
There it is. No recollection, but I believe you.
It took that hamster a long time to get that wheels turning in there.
You can't play it both ways. You're like, I'm a night owl. I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be riding,
and
then you're
just like, that doesn't mean the hamster's always running full tilt. Sometimes it's a little slow, but we got him going there.
Oh my goodness. Like we're on the same.
I feel better. I only mispronounced one name, but I did remember a name that was meaningless to everybody tonight. So
there you go. Never say the appearing on the Chase Thomas podcast is not healthy. Not good for the brain.
That's right. I'm one for two tonight. Had an epic fail, and then I pulled one out, so I did okay.
Batting 500. That's what we like. That's what you want to do.
I'm better than the meteorologist.
It's a great job, though. Meteorology. That's a great job. There you go, Brandon Hubbs. Always a pleasure. I'll talk to you soon.
See you, buddy.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.